session number 10436, reel 2.
One of them asked us, why didn't you go to the light, the strong light on the right-hand side, that was left-hand side then. I said, well, my father told me to get out from the border as fast as you can. And he said, yes, that was a good idea, because there's a village and the Germans are waiting and taking people and straight to the camp, so what do they do with them later, we don't know. Anyway, they took us to the railway station next day. On the way, we saw a pool of blood. And they told us it was a Polish soldier returning home, and they found arms on him, revolver, and they shot him. German patrol shot him straight away. Going to the station, we met German patrol, but they just looked at us and didn't take any notice. Then we got into the train, and you can imagine the normal compartment, like British, in British trains, when you can, the older type, you can, what, 8 people? We counted, it was 13 of us, and everybody had luggage with them. And then on the next station, another 5 people moved in, so it was something fantastic. And anyway, we got to Warsaw. The only transport was the horse-drawn lorries, and they were going this way or that way, and you pay so much. And I got as far as Poniatowski Bridge in Warsaw, because we lived in a street which was parallel to the Vistula River. And I got off, went down with my pack, said goodbye to the other 2 chaps. I never saw them again, though we exchanged addresses and all that, but we never sort of managed to see each other. And there was a man with a horse cart and bricks on it. And he saw me struggling with my 20 kilos. And he said, oh, put it on. So I put it on. And then I drove near the house. And on the balcony was my aunt and my mother. And when I waved, my mother fainted. A few days before, a soldier came and said, well, I saw you. He must have been one of my men or somebody who, because he knew my name, and he said that I'm sorry to say I saw your son was killed in action. Probably got mixed up with another officer cadet, because you know it wasn't so many days we were together, and so of course that was a bit of a shock. And then I started normal life in Warsaw, trying to find my friends. Now, you ask me about German minorities. I was standing in Warsaw, Marszałkowska Street, which is a main street, about a fortnight after I arrived back. Oh no, it was later than that. That was being spring already, early spring. And I was waiting at the tram stop, and I saw a German cavalry officer. And he saw me, and he came to me and said in Polish, hello, Witold, how are you? And I looked at him, and I knew who it was. I can use his name. His name was Karol Hempfler, and he was a chairman of our legal student association when I was at university. We knew he had family in Łódź, and they have a little factory or bigger factory, I wouldn't know. And he started talking, and I looked at him. He was an officer cadet in the Polish army in cavalry. I looked at him and I said, He said, well, you see, don't be surprised. You see, my family is German, as you knew. And of course, we had a factory to defend. So I had to join the German army. And I was immediately given rank of lieutenant, full lieutenant. Though he was a cadet officer in the Polish army, he was given rank of full lieutenant. Well, so that was, and he said to me, he had a girlfriend, or fiancée even, her name was Irka Emel, another German name. And he said, do you know where Irka is? I can't find her. I said, no, you see, I just returned, so I haven't time to meet anybody. Later on, I learned from the colleagues that she didn't want to to have anything to do with this bloody German. She was Polish, and that's it. And she didn't, she was hiding from him. So here you are. When we come later on to the to my home army unit, I'll tell you another fact about that, about the German minority in Poland. Well, that I got in touch with my best friend, who is still alive in Poland, and he was in touch already with the professors of university, of legal wing, and they decided to start training law students. So this colleague of mine and myself, we organized a meeting. It was already illegal Polish school directors. And they sent us groups of students. It was a big meeting in the tallest building in Warsaw to choose. We were thinking, well, what the professors can take, say, small groups of students. We were thinking about 8 students in each group, maximum, and say, for the first year. The other years were, of course, smaller. The students slowly got in touch with professors and they made groups of them, and they were going through the year by year by year. But the first year was a difficult one. We wanted boys with matriculations from 1939 and girls, of course. And we said, oh, well, say about 8 groups. That's all we can do. When we arrived in this place with my colleague, was about 250 people screaming to be taken as students in this underground wing of the Warsaw University. So instead of 8, the groups were of 10 or 12, and we had 12 groups in the first year. And then it went and went and went. I was responsible for security, and I must say that with luck, we haven't lost one student. Later on, when I was in Poland, my colleagues were laughing. I said, well, you can do anything you like in Poland. 3/4 of lawyers, advocates, as we have in on the continent, are your students. And the other 1/4 are judges. So you were right. But so I was busy with that, organizing this. And it went all the time to the Warsaw Rising, this university.
Were people very careful from the security point of view, or did you have problems with people who were careless?
I did have problems. We had a group of girls, students, only. One group was only. The other one were mixed. And with this group of students, it happened in the second or third year even, the boyfriends were the problem. Because we're waiting outside, you know, the house, and walking around and making a lot of noise, which we wanted to avoid. So once or twice I had to stamp on that. But people generally were very, very careful. They learned very quickly. Well, you must remember, we have a tradition of from the 1918 war. Was an organization called POW. Which was run by the Piłsudski Legionnaires group, and they were, of course, underground. Of course, the risks were much smaller than for us, but we had this. The joke was that on the lowest floor in the big house was children's classes. The higher up was a gymnasium. The higher up was the university. On the top of the house was the army. Very often, you know, we have code names, words, when the students came to unknown place first time, or you said, I come here to buy cotton or buy coal or something like that. And the fellow at the door or lady said, oh, no, the university is the second floor, the wrong floor, you see. One day, the army, it happened, I came to check section, which is 5-6 men, because we kept to the army standards. The squad was 18 men, and it was divided in 3 parts, and then company and so on. I come to that to that later. Anyway, I came to see this section in Praga, which is the other, actually it was Targówek, it's a part of, and I saw some gentlemen waiting on the steps. I looked at this. Oh, he said, oh, the army is there. It's just this door here. So I said, what are they waiting for? Five fellows waiting there. Anyway, a knock opened the door. Everything was all right. The NCO in charge reported and all that. I saw it working. There was only one room. There was a girl sitting there. And when I come out, I said, well, what's all that? What's this fellow here doing? There's another squad, not ours, because it could be, you know, some other unit might have its squad in the same place. An hour later, oh no, she said, she's a prostitute. He said, she's a prostitute. You see, she's giving this room for an hour to the army. So that, anyway, so I was busy with university for some time. Then I, through somebody, as usually it happens, I joined an organization called Black Musketeers. They really were more intelligence units, and they were mostly regulars, army officers.
How did you come to join it?
Well, excuse me. During the 1918-20 war, my father was in the 36th Infantry Regiment, very famous regiment in the Polish Army, and through one of his colleagues, he was actually intelligence officer. I got a push, and I found myself in this organization. There was hundreds of organizations at that time in Warsaw, and you know. But we had problems there because there was a lot of arrests, and I lost contact. Then I got a contact with two political friends. To the what was called later NSZ, National Army Forces, which were later on part of AK. They promised, at the same time, I organized from my students a platoon of 32 men, and I started training them in the army, but I couldn't do it myself, having other responsibilities. Normally, I had to work. I was working as well. So I'll stop and tell you about my work. Before the war, my aunt, which is still alive in Poland, worked for a firm the firm's owners lived in Katowice. They were Polish Germans. All we knew were. And when the Germans marched in, they came, they bought a bigger place in the crossroad, Królewska Marszałkowska. There were two of them. One was Austrian, the other one was German from Silesia, from Katowice. The true story was that the son of this fellow from Katowice couldn't speak German. Mother couldn't speak Polish. They brought him as a Polish citizen. And they had some problems when the Germans marched in before the people scored, but they managed to get out of it. Later on, this son married a Polish girl, and this family stayed in Poland in 1957, and they, with all honors, were allowed to go to Germany. I have a postcard here. I have written to Mr. Sivina, was his name, from the camp later on, from a German camp in Murnau, asking about my family. And I have a postcard here from him, in German, of course, otherwise it wouldn't be allowed, telling me that he doesn't know what happened, but as soon as he find out, he let me know. And they moved to West Germany, and I've been in touch with them. He died a few years ago. So loyalties are very unusual, aren't they? A family like. Anyway, so I worked in this firm. My aunt still ran it. At the beginning, they sent a German from Silesia who worked from them there to help with any German authorities. Later on, he was called up and he went to submarines, I know. He was a Hitlerite with the Hitler picture, you know, in the office, and my and took it off. I said, and she said, no, 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 you can put God here, but not Hitler, you know. Anyway, these fellows used to come to Warsaw, and later on, my aunt and we can take that Hakenkreuz off when they're here, and they're very good, I must say. They used to ask me, are you a general in the Polish army? They didn't have any doubts what's going on. So I normally worked. So all that was done very cleverly and quickly. In between, you know, I disappeared for an hour or later in the afternoon or in the evening. And later on, the small arms magazine was behind the racks of stuff in the firm, in the basement. And I had to take pseudonym, because we all have pseudonyms, Witold, because I couldn't say anything else, because people who work in this firm, they knew what was going on, and if somebody said for Mr. George or somebody else, they wouldn't know who it was. So I kept my Christian name. So that all this was taking time from early morning to late at night. Well, this NSZ people promised me help, instructors, arms, just even for training. It never happened. So I got a bit fed up with them, because I have 32 men. I promised them to train them to be soldiers, and I was the only one to train them.
Why do you think they didn't live up to their promises?
They didn't have it. They just didn't have it. They promised, but they didn't. They didn't have the stuff. And then through friends, again, I got a chance to have a word with the officer from AK, from Bashta, which means Tower Regiment, to join that unit with my men. And after a talk with him, I could see that there are people who represent something, and it's a real, real army unit. It is a very peculiar army unit, because most of the units, all of them, were based on the pre-war army, Polish army units. Well, this one started, I started by a student who never been in the army, and he started his unit and got some regular army officers, and they were first as a battalion, defense HQ defense battalion, General Komorowski's own. Later on, when I came in, it developed into two battalions, and then very quickly into full regiment on the establishment of the pre-war. It was about 2,500 men and women when the rising came. Anyway, so I started as a platoon commander.
With the rank of captain?
No, nothing like that. Not in the Polish army. With the same rank, a platoon is a smaller than, I don't know if you surely know, the squad, platoon, company, battalion, and so on. So that I had my 30 men, and that was a platoon, which was a half of the normal army establishment, a third. And 11th of November, 1942, I was promoted to second lieutenant, and still as a platoon commander. More or less at the same time, I was for a few months doubling as an intelligence officer for a Region 4 in Warsaw, temporary. I didn't particularly like that work, but it just happened that they wanted somebody, and the old man asked me, regimental commander, said, well, would you like to take it? I said, all right, I'll take it as well. So my days were from morning to night, no time for girls, which was painful, and that's how it went. a little bit later. You got the dates there. I was promoted to the second in command of the company, of the third company, 1st Battalion, Regiment Tower. And that lasted to the rising. Before that, different thing happened. Again, through somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, I learned they were looking, our intelligence people, a courier service, as you know. The problem was that our station, radio station, could send messages from Warsaw or anywhere in Poland, especially from Warsaw, only for 2 or 3 minutes, because the German have the special units which detect this. And there was a lot of material which have to be put on the micro films and taken to France, from France to Spain, from Spain to Portugal, from Portugal to London. Their promotions and reports and all sorts of things. And they wanted people to go there to do this. They have some accident, somebody was caught and somebody... I said, well, all right, I'll go. Ask my regimental commander for permission to go. He said, how long are you going to be? He was a Silesian, first class officer. And I said, well, it'll be probably 10 days, maybe fortnight. I said, all right. So in the middle of May, first days of May, and I don't know the date, don't remember the date, off we went, three of us. The stipulation was you have to speak good French and good Russian, reasonable. Why? We went as soldiers from the Eastern Front on leave. Well, a German would go on leave to Germany, not to Paris. Why? Why we were going to Paris? We were sons of the Russian emigres who joined, volunteered German army, so therefore, normal thing, we went to our families in Paris. And we had to speak French, and I used to speak very good French, and Russian. Off we went. And when I was going to the railway station in Warsaw, the army entrance was from the side, I met two of my officer cadets, because we were running, at the same time, we were running schools from NCOs and officer cadets. I was running in the company as a second in command. I was running an NCO school, and the commanding officer was running officer cadet school. Of course, we have other instructors to come as well. And two of them with two girlfriends. One of them is alive, is here in London still. And they saw me in German uniform, but of course nobody, you know, everybody took it in stride. You know, and they stopped. It was a big, modern, big window opposite the entrance to the German side of the railway station, and they stood there and watched what I was doing. And they saw me going to the station. Do you want any details of
yes,
that?
Please, yes.
Well, I got my marching papers, and I was waiting for other two, and they were late. One of them was usually late. And the German MP was started looking, sort of. So I went to the window and showed my papers and got my food for the journey. And then, of course, they saw me with, you know, getting my stuff in, so that was all right. Well, they arrived, we went downstairs, and it was about over 1,000 men waiting for that leave train. And then we heard that the leave train is be delayed and will arrive instead of 11 o'clock at night, at 2 o'clock. And it did arrive, and was full. And of course, we have to storm to get in. Well, we traveled standing on one leg most of the time, or on the two leg. Anyway, I don't think we changed the sleeve train anywhere. It got straight to Metz. In Metz, we were detrained. We noticed the gangs of workers helping the doing something to the rails. Obviously, it was bombed. In Metz were a big wooden barracks. We washed, we shaved, we got hot soup, we changed the money for franc occupation, for occupation of francs. And then was a French train waiting for us. Well, here, there are two ways. One train was going through north, and only those who had to go that way went that way because of the bombardment. And most of us, people went the southern way to Paris, to Metz, Sarlat, and Saarbrücken, that way. We sort of got all three different compartments. And the compartment I was in was sort of half third class for soldiers and the second class for officers. And I saw the officers, there was a woman sitting there. It's a very romantic story, but it's true. Anyway, nice looking blonde. And she came and asked me, she wanted to change money. I realized, I said, weiter. So she went. I wouldn't believe it. She returned, went to this officer's place, and then we saw the dogs with the tax paid, which was military police, where they have this
neck band
sort of metal plate. And we were just checking papers, not to everybody's, but some people. And they didn't check a fellow who was further, not the second one of us, just got to, and they got to me. And when I showed the papers, I realized she was standing behind me. So I realized that, oh yes. So I just, showed her papers as well. Oh, I said, all right. They saw the officers there. I said, all right. Off they went. And she got all three of us, bought a bottle of vodka, and we had another one. She got all three of us, and she started asking questions. She was in grey uniform. She told us she just came from Yugoslavia.